Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and it was on this date in 1951 that the first Major League Baseball game was televised in color. And back then, we still had the Brooklyn Dodgers and we still had the Boston Braves. Those were the two that fought it out. And also, Alcatraz Prison was Alcatraz Island was opened as a prison for the first time. It received federal prisons on this date, August 11th. In what year? Think about it. What year did they probably start Alcatraz? Pick a year. You have to pick a year. I bet you went back too far. 1934. That surprised me. I was thinking, what, 1899? Nope, they didn't start using that as a prison until 1934. That's just kind of interesting. And also, the first SOS signal was sent, a distress signal was sent by a ship. The American ship Arapaho was sent off the coast of Cape Hatteras. And guess what year the first SOS signal was sent? I'll give you a hint. The wireless was invented in 1895. So the first SOS was sent in 1909. Interesting. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about the election. So Barack Obama is on vacation, and he has gone to Hawaii, where he was born and where his grandmother lives, and he's vacationing down there. And he's come out a couple of times to make a couple of statements about the situation in Georgia. McCain has been on the campaign trail, although he takes weekends off and goes to one of his homes. And McCain has kept up the attack. They released three new attack ads, basically McCain ads that went after Obama, just as Obama was going on vacation. So basically, I've seen almost all the ads I've seen from the McCain campaign in the last 3 weeks have been negative ads about Obama, trying to, you know, define his character, define him before Obama gets to define himself. And, for example, they've each released one for the Olympics. Now, Obama announced he was buying $5 million worth of advertising time during the Olympics. And then McCain went and outdid him and bought $6 million. Now, keep in mind, no presidential candidate has ever before bought time during the Olympics. And the reason is that you usually do targeted advertising. It doesn't usually pay. Like, if you're selling Titleist golf balls, it doesn't pay to take out an ad during prime time on the average weeknight on one of the networks, because you'll reach a lot of people who aren't golfers, and they don't care about Titleist golf balls. So they tend to advertise golf equipment during a golf event on the weekends, on a network that's covering a golf event, or on the Golf Channel, or on ESPN during a golf event. Just makes sense. You reach a smaller audience, but they're all golfers. It's the same with the Olympics. You normally don't target all Americans. You target likely voters. So a lot of ads appear on news shows, during the nightly news, on the cable news channels, because people who watch news are more likely to be engaged with politics. So it's unusual to make a buy during the Olympics. No one had ever done it before. Now both candidates are doing it. So they each have one ad out so far during the Olympics. And it's interesting, the contrast. Obama's ad is positive and doesn't mention McCain. It basically says, it looks to the future. It says, the hands that built X could build this. The hands, and it basically, you know, the hands that built these products before can now build these new products. The hands that built, that put roofs on houses can put solar panels on houses. The hands that built the automobiles that got us where we are today can build the automobiles of the future that are cleaner and use less oil or use electricity or whatever. So an uplifting kind of a message. The McCain campaign is the McCain ad that's out and being used so far in the Olympics is another attack ad on Obama. And basically, it's an interesting strategy they're using. They're basically going after Obama's celebrity. And you may have heard about the older ads, but basically they used an ad that had Paris Hilton in it, and briefly, just a half a second, and Britney Spears, two, of course, disgraced young women who have been known to engage in inappropriate behavior. And they basically claim Obama's the biggest celebrity in the world, even bigger than these two is the implication. And maybe he's as flighty is sort of the implication. But he's not ready to lead. That's essentially their message. He's a celebrity. Everybody likes him. He draws big crowds, but he's not ready to lead. Now, on one level, in analyzing that ad or this approach, because he's got a series of these now, Obama's too much of a celebrity. On one level, what he's doing clearly is taking a play out of Karl Rove's playbook. Rove's theory is take your opponent's biggest strength and turn it against him, weaken him with that. In the past, the strategy has been if they have a particular strength, you avoid it. So if they're strong on domestic policy or on health care, you avoid health care. Or if they're strong on foreign policy, if they got a strong military record, you avoid talking about it. No, you go right after them. So we had the swift voting of John Kerry. He had war hero credentials, and they decimated him. They basically came out and said he was a liar. Who? Not the guys that served with him. They stood by him. Republicans who had served in Vietnam put out attack ads, and Fox News and Hannity and the boys carried the water. And it was effective, and Kerry was not seen as a war hero by the time it was over. Now, the Democrats won't do that to McCain. You could argue, of course, that McCain is more clearly a war hero than Kerry was because he spent 5.5 years in a prison camp, so it'd be dangerous ground to try and undermine him on that. In fact, Bush and Rove did that in South Carolina in 2000. They basically had a whispering campaign that said, you know, He may be a little crazy. He gets angry easy and he flies off the handle, and maybe that's due to spending all that time in the prison camp. So they've already trashed McCain over that one. The Obama campaign won't do it, and I don't think the 527s will do it either on the Democratic side. But the McCain campaign is clearly trying to establish this notion that Obama, yeah, he's a celebrity. We'll give you that, but it's empty celebrity. Right, so they're trying to take his ability to draw large crowds, which McCain can't do. It was interesting. I was listening to a Republican. Now, what show was this? It was Flipping the Dial, so I forget. But it was a right-wing radio talk show. And actually heard it in the same day. I heard it on two different shows. So I want to say that one of them was Sean Hannity, and I forget what the other one was. Anyway, here was their a basic argument that Obama doesn't generate these crowds on his own. Like when there were 200,000 people in Germany to see him, there was a rock concert. There were bands playing that day, and there was food and other events. And so people came out to see that, and Obama cashed in on it. Actually, that's a false narrative. Basically, Obama announced his speech, and then everything else was put in place by, I don't even know if the campaign put it in place. I think Germans may have cashed in on it. But basically, these were not big-name rock bands that could pull in 100,000, 200,000 people. These were, I assume they were local bands, but basically, they have free concerts in Germany all the time, and they don't draw 200,000 people. It was Obama that drew the people. What's interesting is the Republicans are making this claim that Obama doesn't really draw these big crowds. He happens to go where there are going to be big crowds because of other events. No, sorry, that's not actually true. And that will be proven by his acceptance speech, which is going to be given in a football stadium in Denver. And the 60,000 tickets that are available to the public, there's 75,000 seats in all, the 60,000 tickets available to the public were snapped up within hours, I don't know if it was 8 hours or one day or whatever it was, of the time they were made available to people. So Obama does draw large crowds. and that McCain campaign's trying to figure out how to make that a negative for him. But the conservatives who are on his side are out there claiming, oh, he doesn't draw the big crowds, the crowds are there, and then he goes. No, but that's exactly what John McCain does. I don't know if you saw this, but if you were watching the news in the last few days, about last Friday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever day it was, John McCain went to the Harley rally. I don't even know what they call it, but it's in Sturgis, North Dakota, I think, or is it South Dakota? North Dakota, I think. And it's a big rally of Harleys. I don't know if there's 50,000 people there or what, but it's huge. So McCain scheduled a campaign appearance there. This event was already scheduled to take place. McCain went there. And in general, he had a lot of support there. So he said, I prefer the revving of engines or something. And they all revved their engines for him. But this was their event, and he was only there a few minutes. He was not the reason people came, which is not true in Germany with Obama, or in a lot of the big rallies that Obama's had where he's drawn more than 20,000, 30,000 people or more here in the States. In fact, McCain had a little bit of a gaffe. He did not understand what it takes to win the Miss Cowpie title. He thought of it as a beauty contest. In fact, women have to pretty much strip down to nothing and do lewd dances to win. But not knowing that, and only being in town for a few minutes, he heard about Miss Cowpie, and so he said that maybe he should have Cindy, his wife, future first lady, enter the Miss Cowpie competition. So overall, not a stellar appearance in Sturgis, but here's what I would do if I was Obama. Okay, there are too many people that say that he should not, because they're trying to paint him as a celebrity, he should back away from the celebrity. And rather than have these big events, he should go to town hall meetings and smaller events so that people don't see him as this guy that brings in big crowds, but take him to events where he can talk to people one-on-one. That kind of, you know, of logic. Well, the whole thing about that, though, is, to me, is that it's moving away from his greatest strength. He can outdraw McCain about 10 to 1. He'll draw crowds 10 times the size of that. Okay? So I liked what a guy named Michael Crowley wrote at the New Republic. And basically, he said Obama should get up there, and whether it's in front of the stadium is what he proposes, meaning in his acceptance speech, or it's just some other time, that he say something like this, that Obama say, "My opponent has taken to calling me a celebrity in all his commercials. The suggestion, I can only assume, is that all of you," meaning the people in the crowd, "show up at events like this and donate your time and your money to this campaign, because you're all adoring groupies who are obsessed with me." And that is the meme out there among conservatives. They talk about the awestruck fans and talk about Obama's supporters like they're naive and they don't know what they're doing. And, of course, from a far-right position, their lenses are so skewed when you're that far out on one side or the other. If you think that Obama's an empty suit, and that's what they are trying to convince themselves that he is, because they don't feel he's got enough accomplishments yet to be president, and they minimize his articulateness. If you're far right and you can talk yourself into that about him, then you can easily talk yourself into, well, then the people who support him must be nuts. They must be really wacko. They must be adoring fans. They must be willing to swallow anything. No. If you're where I am, which is left of center, but not a 20%er on the left, you have to look at the fans of, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, the holy BS crowd. Hannity, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, Ingram, holy. And then the BS, Bortz, and Neil Bortz and Michael Savage. Their fans are the ones who are basically put their brains on autopilot, because they're swallowing all the nonsense that they hear from them. But again, that's the right-left dichotomy. We can't understand the other side's positions. But to go on with what Michael Crowley recommends Obama say to the country and to his own supporters about this, is that if they're calling me a celebrity, they are basically saying that you, who show up at my events and donate time and money, you're adoring groupies who are obsessed with me. Now, that would certainly be flattering if it were true, but I'm not going to delude myself. The reality is that I can't act, I can't sing, and my personal life is incredibly boring. The truth is that no one would be paying any attention to me at all if I wasn't talking about things that really matter to a lot of people. You're not here tonight, and you're not watching at home because you want to be entertained. Lord knows there are plenty of things you could be doing with your time right now that would be far more entertaining than listening to me. No, you're here tonight because you love your country and you're concerned about the direction it's headed over the last 8 years. You're not here tonight to see what kind of outfit I'm wearing or to hear my latest hit single. And if you are, you're going to be disappointed. No, you're here because you want change. You want a government that fights for people like you and not on behalf of powerful special interests. You want a government that keeps you safe by pursuing a rational foreign policy and keeps you, your family secure by creating jobs, ensuring access to affordable health care, and fighting for energy independence. That's why you're here. That's why you're volunteering your time at record levels. That's why you're contributing your hard-earned money in record amounts. So remember, when John McCain and his surrogates call me a celebrity, they're not insulting me. They're insulting you. They're insinuating that you're a mindless groupie rather than a concerned citizen, that you're a fan rather than a voter. But it's not going to work. You know why you're here. You know why you're watching. And you're much smarter than they give you credit for. I like that argument, and that's why I read Michael Crowley's piece from the New Republic. So, back to the campaign. I mentioned that McCain has new ads out and that Obama's ad for the Olympics is, in general, positive. I don't agree with everything that Michael Crowley said in there, by the way. This energy independence everybody keeps talking about is a long ways off. We need to be, it'd be nice if politicians could afford to tell the truth, but in general, we have a limited ability to do that. So let me take a short break, and when we come back, we will wrap this up with a little bit more about what's gone on in the last week. Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station. Well, you might be able to get one for $5 million. We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio, and we are just 10 minutes from Midnight Mutants with Adam. Midnight Mutants and Adam will be here at 11. And I want to talk right now about one other thing that was in the news, and it the decision came down on Friday, so it didn't get a lot of play. And frankly, I heard a lot of talk over the weekend, Friday night into Saturday. I heard the Sunday morning shows. I didn't hear all the Sunday morning shows, but I heard quite a bit of them, and I heard some of the cable stuff tonight, and I didn't hear anybody discuss this. Oh, a little bit Friday night, I guess, yeah. So, Bin Laden's driver was convicted on some counts and freed and acquitted on other counts. Basically, he was acquitted of conspiracy to commit terror, And he was convicted of supporting Al-Qaeda and ferrying weapons for Al-Qaeda. Okay, and this guy's name, as you may know, is Hamdan, Salim Ahmed Hamdan. And he's the first trial that's gone forward in the revised military tribunals that the Bush administration has set up. Now, a lot of people have argued that they have made mistakes in how they've approached this. First of all, it's taken them 6 years to get anybody to trial. Secondly, the Supreme Court has smacked them back two or three times about habeas rights, about a variety of things. And third, there was not really any reason to set up this special military tribunal with its special rules. The traditional rules of military courts would have done just fine the way they try prisoners of war, in the opinion of a lot of experts. But Bush administration wanted to stack the deck a little further. For example, they are allowed to introduce evidence that the defendants can't see, things like that under these rules. And in the end, the jury came back, convicted him of some of these charges. They could have given him up to 30 years. The prosecutor said, you got to give him 30 years. The court, this is six military people sitting on the jury, the court gave him 5.5 years in prison. And since he served 5 years, a little over 5 years already, and they give him credit for time served, he will be out in 5 months, or eligible to get out in 5 months. Well, it's no wonder I didn't hear a lot of conservative talk shows talking about this. Of course, they could have gone on and railed about how unfair it was, but of course, the military tribunals made the decision. This was not domestic courts. This is what the Bush administration wanted. They thought they'd get the harshest justice out of this. So there's a couple things going on here. One is that one of the reasons you might expect a military jury and a military tribunal to go easy on somebody like Hamdan is this was Osama bin Laden's driver. I mean, was Hitler's driver charged with terrorism? Well, you know, the charged with the same crimes Hitler committed? Was Al Capone's driver charged with that? Yes, they were knowingly around criminals. All right? But when you go to military courts, they understand the chain of command, and they want to hold the people responsible who are responsible. Right? In general, they don't want to hold privates responsible if orders were given by generals. So in the case of Osama bin Laden's driver, they probably concluded that, look, this guy just didn't have that much influence and pull. He's not a big fish. Let's not put him away for the rest of his life. So they gave him 5.5 years. His sentence will be up in 5 months. Then the question is, what does the Bush administration do with him? Now, we're in August now, so this will actually be after the administration. It'll be fall to the next administration to handle. But, of course, the Pentagon gets a big say, and so we'll see what comes up. But they don't have to let him free. They could argue that he is still an enemy combatant and still a danger and hold him under those principles. As Bush has always said, he has the right to hold anybody indefinitely. That's what he says he has in a time of war like this. I think a President Obama and a President McCain would both look on this differently. But it would also be really bad form for, let's say, Bush was still in office when his sentence was up. It is pretty bad form to give the guy a trial, convict him, and then after he served his sentence, say, oh, we're going to hold you longer. You know, we think you did more or something. What's the point of having the trial if you're not going to let him go when the time served? So this is kind of a black eye for the approach and the way the prosecutors handled this. Basically, the other thing that came out, now this verdict came out on Thursday, so it was I read about it all on Friday. And then by Sunday, the Washington Post had an analysis by Josh White, a long piece, that talked about how the Bush administration inside the Pentagon and the Justice Department and the administration had been talking about a deal for Hamdan, okay? There was talk of giving him 10 years in prison, and the U.S. officials inside the government, not the Pentagon, said that's too short a sentence for a terrorist. We're not going to go along with that. So they could have had 10 years, and they said, no, no, we'll get more than that, and now they get 5.5 from a jury. The other thing this happens, of course, is for them now to get other convictions, they got a little bit of a problem. And if they don't want to go the conviction route, they may want to cut deals. But why would you now agree to take 10 years if you're a lawyer and your defendant is a minor player in Al-Qaeda, okay, like the driver, and the driver only got 5.5 years, why would you take a plea deal from the Bush administration for 10 years or something? So they've really mismanaged this right up and down the line. They've mismanaged things from the time they went to Guantanamo. And, you know, there's a parallel here as far as I'm concerned, because they mismanaged it by trying to be too harsh. Okay? They want to, the problem is the simple black and white thinking. Okay, if he's with Osama bin Laden, then he's a terrorist too. Yes, but people have different roles. This guy was his driver. And so it's the same with the way I look at the countries that we deal with. You know, Bush said after 9/11, you're either with us or you're against us. But he only used that policy in the places he wanted to go after people who were against us. So he used it in places like Afghanistan, and he used it in Iraq, and he's tried to use it in North Korea, but they already have the bomb, so he's now come to a more conciliatory position, and he's making some progress with the help of China. And he's tried to use it against Iran, but that's a tough nut to crack as well. But Saudi Arabia, they're not necessarily with us. They're still letting the people in the mosques stir up the anti-Americanism because it takes the pressure off of them. Pakistan, they're not with us 100%, but we're not taking an all or nothing, a black and white view of them, right? So Bush says he's black and white about these things, but he's only black and white when it matters to him. It's the same with the Guantanamo thing and this whole, you know, that the best foreign policy is always use the stick, always use the military, always use the threat of force. No, the best foreign policy is diplomacy. You got to structure win-win situations for people. That is a win-win for Pakistan, a win-win for Iran, right? People want to get something for their trouble if they negotiate. Okay, that's the way it works. And so always threatening force doesn't necessarily work. And I guess the last thing I'll say about George W. Bush here is, there was a quote that I thought was interesting from the weekend when Bush was in China. He did several interviews, but might have been the interview with Bob Costas, for all I know. But he said basically that critics, quote, think if you establish a personal relationship, then you're signing off on everything that person does. He was trying to explain that, you know, foreign policy is complex. The problem with that is that it's more than that. Of course, just because he has a personal relationship with Putin doesn't mean that he agrees with everything Putin does. By the same token, George W. Bush's problem is that he thinks that having a personal relationship is enough, you can jawbone them. So he said he was going to jawbone the Saudis. If he got in, he would bring the price of oil down. This is back when it was $1.30 a gallon, right? The gas was $1.30 a gallon. He said, we'll jawbone them, and that's what the president should do, and get the prices down. Well, he's tried jawboning Saudi Arabia, and he hasn't been able to get them to reduce the price of oil. And he started with this great relationship with Vladimir Putin, and he looked in his soul, and it was going to all be okay. And now, not only have we seen a long time ago that Vladimir Putin's soul is more KGB than it is Christian, but you can't count on the personal relationship with him. In fact, Putin has played Bush like a violin. So it's interesting that he makes this comment this past weekend, but the situation with Russia has deteriorated badly. And we will solve that one next week. For now, that'll do it for the Andy Finn Show for this week. And we'll be back next Monday night. Until then,
You can listen to this or past shows at my website, or read some of my writings, or listen to my parody songs at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. Remember, do it. Don't doubt it.